Welcome to the Round 16 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name is Marcus. I'm in an especially good mood today. This week we're joined, as per usual, by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. How you going?
Like I said, feeling great, mate.
For
the first time in a long time, feeling good to be on the show. So we'll introduce our guest on for this week, Dunny. It's awesome to have you back.
Thanks, guys. Awesome to be back.
So this week, I've top scored out of the three of us. So I'm just going to start.
Finally.
Yeah. Finally had a big one.
Golf clap.
26.81, and with that, I've moved up into the top 5,000 for the first time this year, so I'm super, super happy. 26.81 is pretty big for my team. I've got some holes in it, like Oxley, who pulled out random 118. Still a couple of players disappointing, like Wallace 86 and Brody Smith 50. I had Maynard 44, but I had just some huge scorers too. Dalhouse 143, Sammy Jacobs 162, Todd Goldstein with the vice captain. I'm assuming both you boys had that too. 221 doubled up. And the new recruit, how could I forget? Gary Ablett, 189. Oh, yeah. So happy to have him on my team. So spirits are high this week, boys. In the top 5,000. Awesome. I'm glad to finally be here and catching you guys. Dunny, you hit the top 5,000 club a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, mate. I got there, I think it was last week or the week before, and you just got me this week when I was looking at the scores on Sunday afternoon. I thought, oh, no, Marcus got me. I came in with a 26.37, which puts me just outside the top 3,000 at the moment. Really happy with my trades this week. Got rid of Jordan Lewis, who had a 90-something, and brought in Gary Ablett for his 189. Very, very happy with that little move. Also had Dalhouse with his 143, Mundy's 133, and very happy with Heath Shaw back there with 126.
Good job. I'm sure your parents are both very proud of you and your rankings. My backline didn't fire this week. I think last week they all scored like above 130 or something stupid. Only Heath Shaw managed to do that. Turned out to be a great starting pick, Mr. Shaw. Hasn't missed a game yet. Don't want to jinx him though. Brody Smith, obviously the biggest hole in my team this week. Ablett just killing it again. Also had Goldstein with the vice-captain loophole on. Deledio was pretty reluctant to bring him in. I thought he was injured and he might not be able to hold his form for the rest of the year, but wow, he has absolutely fired it over the last sort of 7 or 8 weeks in my team. Yeah, I guess I had to play Steele on the field, who only got 75, but Boomer Harvey, 118, and yeah, pretty happy with the way things went. I scored 25.87, so about 100 behind you, Marcus, and jumped up to 671 in the rankings. So well inside the top 1,000 now. Hopefully I can have another big week. I'd like to get inside that top 500 over the next few weeks. And yeah, things are going reasonably well, I guess. And I'm actually, one thing that's gone in favor of my team, I think, is that I was probably falling a bit behind in how many trades I had left. But with everyone forced to go a bit harder to get Ablett in, or so many teams forced to do that, I think that probably helped out my situation a little bit, because I think pretty much everyone's low now.
Yep, all down to critical trades. A few out there with a heap left and almost taunting us at this stage, but wish we could be making a few extra trades. But for those of you out there who still do have trades, we're going to cover your options anyway, and there are a few really tempting players that have bottomed out this week, so a few exciting options to look at. And of course, Gary Ablett, the big topic again, 3 weeks in a row, but after 189, the people that don't have him are almost scrambling to get him in at this point. So we'll of course cover Gary Ablett as well. Before we get into this week's topics though, we're going to go with our league update. And again, after a massive week of scores, our leagues all across the board moved up, I reckon. Now we have 12 of the top 24, which is awesome. Continue to have 10 of the top 20 and still hold first, second, and third. So everybody's done awesome. And by the averages, I think we did have another really good week. So well done to everyone.
Yeah, 8 of the top 10. Rocking.
Yeah, awesome work, guys. Keep it up.
Now to the group update. The top score for this week eclipsed me by another 50 points, 27.31 by Frosty Fruit. So well done to you, Frosty Fruit. And with that, he moves very close to the top 1,000, sitting at 1,100th. So well done to you, Frosty Fruit. And just an update of the guys in the top 100 in our Supercoach Coach group. Cometti's Legions at 15th, Travesty 20th, and Nate Snags at 49th. Everybody pretty much tread water this week.
Very happy with Comedy's Legion, mate. Excellent work by Coach, a member of the forums, sitting on 15th. Pretty good work.
Just to consolidate, that is awesome, because I think only maybe a month ago we were talking about him cracking into the top 100 mark. So he's having a rip over the last month.
Yeah, my mate Nate's been a bit of a letdown, really, hanging around that 50 mark. Just can't get going into the top 10.
Love to have a season like that, mate. Must be fun. Don't forget, you can ask us questions on a Tuesday at supercoachcoach and facebook.com/supercoachcoach. It's what we use to form our show each week. So thank you to everyone for your questions this week. We'll start this week with the must-have. So talk about the huge scores. Todd Goldstein with his 221 is just humongous. And then, of course, Gary Ablett at 189. So Carl Voloshki's questions first. Why did Ablett have to be so good? Do we have to get him into our teams for those coaches that don't have him?
I think this is Coach, and he doesn't have Ablett sitting at 15th. So I think that's a really, really key question. I know that there's coaches that we know pretty well that have gone down to one trade to bring Ablett in. I don't think that's advisable personally. And if you've got a sort of a stacked midfield with no real weak performers and three or less trades, I think it'd be very hard to actually be bringing Ablett in this week. In seasons past, he's definitely been a must-have, and on the weekend he was a must-have, and the weekend before that, when I had him and not many people did, it was pretty awesome. So I guess having him, it's hard to say to someone not to bring him in, because he does just seem to be absolute cut above the rest in far as Supercoach goes. But I mean, if he posts 100 this week and you've gone down to one trade, then that really won't have seemed worth it. So it's same discussion as last week. If I've got three or less trades, I just don't think I could be finding the money to bring him in.
I think you're right, mate. I think in that situation, what I'd be doing is looking to bring him in if I had a serious injury to someone like Fife or something like that, if I was under three trades or less. So, because you're probably going to have to double trade to get him in unless you've got a stack of cash sitting there in your bank. So you'd be down to that one trade left. And I think we worked out there's 6 or 7 weeks to go till Supercoach Grand Final. You just can't afford to ride it with one trade, I don't think.
And I also don't think you want to get on the Ablett train as a strategic move after everybody else has gotten on a week before and got a 189. Because if he drops off, then you're just at a loss now. There's no way you can catch that back up because you've already committed to the trade. Whereas if Ablett starts to lapse, that's where you have the opportunity to now get an upper hand. So it's unfortunate, but now that you've missed it, if you've not made the call because you don't have enough trades, then unfortunately the situation is sort of the same for you this week. So, yeah, I agree with both you guys.
I think that's a really good point you raised, mate, that you almost just have to gamble that he's not going to go completely nuts from here and gamble against everyone else that has already burnt so much to bring him in. Because if he doesn't go nuts, or if there is carnage and you're going to need those 3 to 5 trades, then that's where you get the advantage back. You might have to be patient. You might have to wait to get it, but it might come at some stage. It might not come as well, and it might turn out that going down to one trade was completely reasonable. Given the season that we've had so far and the way that last season ended, I don't think that that is necessarily likely to happen. To be able to survive this long on one trade, we have seen teams do it in the past. It's very hard for coaches to be barracking against Ablett, though. He's just the master of Supercoach.
I can understand why it's so hard, but yeah, if we had an ending to this season like we did last, you can crash like 5,000 to 10,000 rankings in the matter of a couple of weeks if you don't have the trades to deal with. Like, we had 6-8 players out in one fell swoop last week, in 1 week. So
yeah, last season, yeah.
Last season.
You're thinking that you're still a chance of catching me, mate.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I do have a better chance if injuries hit, and the people who have more trades obviously have the upper hand in that situation. So hold on to them. You'll probably only have 3 trades left if you didn't bring Ablett in anyway, so you need them. All right, on to Reese Usden's question. He doesn't have Goldstein or Gazza, but we just talked about Gazza.
That would have
Ouch.
Yeah.
He's in the Queens, so he feels like he's letting the team down, but don't worry about it, Reese. You've got 5 trades left, so that's great. What do you guys reckon? Should he get Goldstein or Gazza in with 5 trades? He can pull the trigger on one of them, surely.
You'd have to get one of those guys in. I don't think you can afford not to. If you've got 5 trades left, his question there says, you know, do I go all out to get one in? Absolutely. It just comes down to which one you can afford to bring in. And I guess, say you've got Stephen Martin and Sam Jacobs sitting in your ruck, then you'd probably look to bring Gaz in. Or if your midfield's really strong, maybe look to get Goldie in, but got to have one.
I'd hate to be bringing in anyone over $700,000 during a season. That is a really difficult move to make. If I had to bring in one, I'd definitely be going for Ablett. I think that Goldstein's price, based on previous performance, is more inflated than Ablett's is.
Yeah, good point. I forgot about how expensive he is now.
He's more than Ablett. He's 720, 718.
Yeah, but he's just scored 221, guys. Oh, what an amazing score, no? I love Goldie. Goldie doesn't even have the injury risk that Gazza has. Like, he still has a shoulder. Like, he could miss a week here and there. I don't know. It's closer for me than just saying go with Gaz. I do really like Goldie. So, I like what you said, Dunny. Look at who your trade-outs are. I mean, if you've got Marich and you're worried that his scoring might drop off, maybe you want to bring in Goldstein. If you've got Wallace in the midfield, obviously Gablett is a way better option. That's how I'd look at it, personally.
It is hard because both of them are, you know, $700,000 plus. Yeah, it's going to come down to A, what you can afford, but you know, B, really look at the structure of your team and what you've got to play with. If you are rocking someone like Marich there, then I'd definitely be recommending trying to scrape together the cash for Goldstein.
I've been speaking to a few people during the week that maybe didn't have Ablett or they didn't have Goldstein, but geez, how painful would the weekend have been not having both of those guys?
I feel bad, I reckon, for Reece. I don't think I would have even looked at my team, or particularly not my league matchups, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, especially the number of people that the vice captaincy on Goldstein to get double whammied if you didn't have him at all is just
That's exactly what happened to my wife in a big cash league. She doesn't have Goldstein. She was playing someone that did, had the vice captain on him, and basically just didn't watch any footy over the weekend because she just couldn't bear it and kind of ruined her footy weekend, to be honest.
All right, on to the next question here from Ashley Bishop. So we're off Ablett and Goldstein now, and on to two more must-haves in the back line, Hodge or Pickin. So I don't think we've had an XVY yet comparing the two of them, but they're both probably in that top-tier defenders at the moment. Which of the two would you prefer, Mark?
I think it's a bit of a tough call. Pickin has definitely surprised me that he's just kept going and going with his scores. Listening to Clarko, I think he was on the couch on Monday night, he was saying that Hodge will probably continue to play a fair bit of midfield. That's what I read him his talk as, because he has been sort of matching him up against Fife and Pendlebury and JPK in the last few weeks. So if Hodge doesn't miss a game, and he really shouldn't, given the fact that they're really going to be fighting for a top two spot and he missed three earlier in the year, I think Hodge is a level above Pickin. So I'd have a bit more faith in Hodgie.
Agree with you, mate. If I had to make a choice between the two, I'm definitely going Hodge on that one. However, if you're really wanting to go unique, I mean, Pickin's only in 5.4% of teams, whereas you've got Hodge sitting in 32% of teams. So, yeah, if you're looking for that point of difference, you could go Pickin, but I probably wouldn't if it were me.
Hodge is in like 70% of the top 2,000 teams as well, so that's another thing to keep in mind.
Yeah, I'm going to buck the trend, and I really like that stat you threw up there, Dunny, because I don't know, maybe it's a case of grass is green on the other side, because I do have Luke Hodge, but I just think that Hodge is more of an injury risk than Pickin, and Hodge is still more of a role risk. Like, I understand that he's a good chance of playing a lot more midfield for the rest of the year or to maintain these midfield minutes, but Pickin is almost guaranteed. Like, he's not stopped playing this midfield role since he swapped in round three, and I don't think that's going to change. They had Kobe Stevens go down as well, who's a midfielder. So I think in terms of role certainty and injury history, Pickin seems like a bit of a better bet. But I mean, Hodge has amazing scoring potential. He is a classier player than Pickin. He probably has a higher ceiling, but Pickin's just shown a lot this year, and I probably just like his consistency at this point.
Yeah, how is it possible that you have Hodge and you're not ranked higher than me?
Brody Smith, mate, and Selwood, two of them together. Kill me now. Kill me now. They both dropped 180Ks.
Yeah. Just having a look at Pickin, his first three scores were his worst three scores, and his lowest since round four was actually this week against Geelong with that 80. So, you know, he's had a stack of big scores in there, you know, 138, a couple of 140 pluses as well. So you're probably onto something there, Marcus.
That was a role thing with those first three games. He was playing his traditional tagging role, I think, across half forward in the first 3 weeks, and then got let loose in the midfield and has just completely crushed it since.
And that's probably the thing that scares me most, is that if he gets thrown back into that role, his scoring will really suffer.
I think that was probably worrying me 5 weeks ago, which is what kept me away from jumping on that bandwagon, but I doubt that would happen from here for all the reasons that you've already mentioned.
Yeah, I think Hodge is more likely to get put at half back for a game and just randomly get tagged out one game than Pickin get moved anywhere, to be honest. So, I mean, I have Hodge, but he's still risky for me. I reckon he could still miss games. Like, he could still score 70s for a couple of weeks. I like him. I think he's clearly, you know, in that top two, but Pickin's been just in stellar form at the moment. So I really wish I traded him in for Oxley, you know, 4 weeks ago and ruining that day. Before we move on to the rookies, if you had five trades left, you had Ablett and you had Goldstein, and you didn't have one of Hodge or Pickin, are they good enough to warrant bringing in with only five trades to go?
I think it comes back a bit like what Dunny was saying with depends whether you've got the weak midfield or weak rucks with the Goldstein versus Ablett thing for Reece. If you've got a weak back like a Brody Smith and you can afford to bring in a Hodge or Pickin, that might be something that would work. But if you've already got six premiums that are going all right, I'd just be saving them for injuries and hoping for carnage.
So even somebody like Hibbard, would you consider?
Oh, personally, probably not.
As you know, that's the situation. I mean, Hibbard's probably my weakest back at the moment, and I've already got Hodge, so I'd seriously be looking at picking. I don't have the cash for him, and I'd need to double trade to get him in, which would take me down to three trades. So I don't think I would do it with a double trade. If I could do it with a one trade, I think I would.
So say on current averages, Hibbert's 80, Pickens just over 100. Say you get 20 points a game for the rest of the year, that's 140 points. If it's one trade, 140 points seems pretty decent. If it's two trades, it's just not enough. You'd be looking to get 150 points per trade, roughly, on the way home, I'd say.
But I think you'd be looking at Pickens averaging 110 if he's a must-have, right? And I think his average is 100, but you take out the 50s and it'll jump.
Yeah, well, his last three averages 112, last five's 107. Yeah, you look at Hodge in comparison, his last three is 131 and last five's 114.
So even if it's 30 points difference over 7 weeks, that's 210 points. And for two trades, it doesn't seem like you'd be definitely maximizing how many points you're going to get from your trades from that. It could be that 210 points is the most you could get out of those two trades, but it could also be that we get a few more injuries and you could get a lot more points by saving those trades.
I like your assessment there, guys. Convince me on that. I think you're better off punting for the injury and getting more points that way. All right, on to the rookies now. Best downgrade option. So a bit late in the season for downgrades, but for anybody looking at it, I did look at the break-even table as I posted it this week, and I saw Riley Knight is available on the bubble, and he's a mid-forward. So, gee, all these late-season mid-forwards are popping up.
Yeah, I like Riley Knight. I think he's had a couple of good games. He was quite good on the weekend in the showdown.
I presume you were there, Dunning?
I wasn't, actually. I couldn't make the game this weekend. My son's footy game actually clashed directly with the showdown, so I couldn't go, which when the final siren went, I wasn't too unhappy about. Cracking game. But yeah, Riley Knight's been really talked up around town here. Seems to be pretty popular. Had done fairly well in the sandful as well. So I think, his spot seems to be okay for the moment in that team. Sloan is rumoured to be coming back in this week, so not sure at the moment. I haven't looked to see who I think would drop out for Sloan to come back in.
How is that possible?
Not sure. Today on one of the radio shows around town, I thought, didn't think he was due back yet. And I know Marcus will trade him straight back in anyway. So
it was listed as 3 to 5 on the injury list last week. 3 to 5 weeks. How does it go from 3 to 5 to none?
Yeah, don't know, mate. I was really surprised when I heard it as well. I thought, really? It hasn't been that long. But yeah, that's something that was, as I say, hitting the radio around town today. I think Riley Knight's a good option. And say he gives you that mid-forward swing as well. So if you've got Jack Steele sitting in, say, your midfield and you can bring Riley Knight into your forward line, at least that gives you the opportunity to swing Jack Steele around where you need him.
Tom Fields at basement price, $102,000. Do you guys know anything about him?
From what I've heard, John Barker seems to like him, and that's, once again, just listening to the media around the place. Minus 53 break even at the moment, so he's at least going to make some cash if he turns up. Carlton seemed to be playing the kids because I think they've lost a few players now, so he's as good a bet as anyone at the moment. The only other one would probably be Jake Coladagini sitting on the bubble as well with a break-even of minus 47. Marcus, you probably know more about the situation down there at Geelong as to whether he's likely to keep a spot.
He needs injuries in order to get a gig. I think he's ready to play AFL, and for his role, he scores pretty decently considering how many high-scoring defenders we do have. But I would be worried about his job security, especially if Geelong are trying to still squeeze into finals. We'll be wanting to get as much experience on Park, and we are stocked up in the back lines. Kyle Langford, is he an option at all, Mark?
Look, I think that they'll want to get some games into him, but in the games that he's played, he seems pretty fragile. He gets up for a young kid and tries to keep going, but he's pretty thin body, and I think that he doesn't seem like he can take a hit, which is probably not great for his long-term ability to stay in the seniors.
Laverde as well, he's on the bubble, Mark. Mid-forward, is he a bit more built up?
He is a bit more built up, a bit more solid, and seems like probably more of a chance of playing out the season, I would suggest, over Langford because of the body size. And he seems to have the intensity of the AFL game a little bit better than Langford does at this stage.
Would you pick him behind Riley Knight?
Probably take Knight first. Knight been on the verge for a while of playing seniors. He does seem like the sort of guy that could go out at any stage, though. And I guess Laverde is the same. So I wouldn't be picking any of the rookies this week with too much confidence.
Hugh Goddard, for anyone who has somebody like Sean Higgins, he was very impressive. Lots of composure in the contest, took his time with the ball, made good decisions. He was super impressive, and he'd be a pretty cool swing player if you had somebody like Higgins. So that's somebody to look out for.
Definitely, if he can keep his spot, this is exactly what we've been expecting for a really long time. It's just that he's sort of been behind a few others at the Saints. And I know that there's actually a lot of teams in the top 2,000 that still have him from the start of the year.
There are three more players that have played two games on the bubble, so I'm just going to chuck their names out. Josh Prodden, Taylor Garner, and James Harms. Garner's the only one I know because they featured him for a little bit after the game because he did a few quality things, and apparently he could play a role for the team, but I don't know how legitimate that is with players still to return in that team.
From what I understand, he is pretty good. I haven't seen much of him apart from his little fight with Hibbert on the weekend where he cost him a bit of money, I believe. But from all reports, he's a good kid, can really play. But yeah, I'd probably stay away from him at the moment.
Yeah, Harms had a really good game on the weekend, but as I think it was Mark Robinson said, it was the worst game of football that he's seen in several years. So probably wouldn't read too much into the Melbourne-Brisbane game.
All right, we'll move off the rookies now and into the back line. We got the most questions about this guy. I think through about four or five different questions, got about 20 plus likes. So he's top of the tongue this week, Brody Smith. Paul Maltman asked, is it worth trading Brody Smith in for a moldy sandwich?
Yes.
And I am super, super bloody frustrated. A 50 on the weekend is just not good enough. He's butchering the ball when he has it. Long kicks that just get turned over straight away, not taking his time to think about things. Oh, frustrating. Dean Vasek's asking whether it's worth trading Smith for somebody like James Kelly or Nick Malcheski. So they're both bottomed out. Malcheski, of course, we talked about last week, bottomed out, went up 15K. So he's still cheap at under 350, scored 94 on the weekend. And then Kelly, I flagged with a 145 break even last week. He actually scored 106, did still drop 19,000. So he's bottomed out now at 340,000. Take out his injury effect. Sub-affected games. He's pretty much only had one score under 80 now, which is pretty darn impressive, especially after that 106. So both decent options and pretty much only cost less than 30K from Smith. If you had three trades, would you think about that?
You're a smart ass. Because that's exactly the situation that I'm in. Finding it a little bit difficult to split those two because Malcheski has probably had three good games in a row, only two good Supercoach games in a row, but he had 22 touches 3 weeks ago. If he can stay fit, I think that's a good trajectory for him. James Kelly, we started him at the start of the year, Marcus. We saw the potential there. Should play out the rest of the season as long as he doesn't get injured again. I'm not confident going from three trades down. I kind of think that I've just got to deal with Smith, and it sucks, and I honestly can't work out how he became so shit.
I was trying to tell you.
You were, but like his possession count was fine. Like he was just sort of, until a few weeks ago, was still getting the 22 touches a week, but he just wasn't hitting targets, and I figured that he would just start hitting targets after a while because kicking is his strength. But watching him in the games, I'm not sure how much the concussions had to do with it because it seems to have knocked all the footy smarts out of him. He holds onto the ball for a really long time, then tries to kick it as far as he can, but ends up kicking it to a contest rather than to an open player, and then like kicks it really poorly to the contest so that it advantages the other team and they just take the ball away. And I'm just really, really surprised by how terrible he's been.
We have the same thing with Andrew Mackey down at the Cats. People say he's a great kick, but if you look at his Supercoach, it's never been brilliant because it takes the long kicks and just darts them out to silly locations sometimes. It's taken a long time and a lot of footy smarts for him to actually pinpoint that, and it's frustrating, and you won't believe it until he's in your team, but now that you see it, now you know, Mark. Now you know the pain.
I'm a Brody Smith owner as well, but he's my bench cover, thankfully. I don't have to play him on the ground.
Yeah, just showing off.
Just to throw a few stats at you there, Mark, he had 11 touches on the weekend, 8 kicks, 3 handballs, 4 marks, just the 1 tackle and the 1 goal assist, no contested possessions, no clearances, right. Spent 82% of the time on the ground, and his efficiency was at 81%.
That's the thing. I was telling you guys, he needs to be fed the ball. His prime directive is stay the hell away from the ball until they can flick it to you clear. So when he gets it finally and he torpedoes it to nowhere, it just kills you. If he gets a clanger kick, -5 points, and he hardly ever gets kicks, it kills it.
He was on 41 at halftime and he finished on 50. I don't think he touched the ball in the third quarter, and Adelaide won the game. Like, it was a good chance for him to score. I'm not sure why he's become so terrible. My bench players are Lever and Pierce that are scoring about the same, so I don't have any options there to sort of loophole him. But I mean, I guess if there's any saving grace, it's that 40% of the top 2,000 have him, 44 teams in the top 100 have him. I guess the teams that don't have him are going to have a huge advantage.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mark. I wish I had just one more trade. If I had just the one more trade, I would trade Smith out in a heartbeat. But I think once you get down to 3, you just sit tight. Like, I didn't even want to get down to 3, but Gablett just insisted that I do it. Now that I'm...
Yeah,
I'm just sitting pretty now.
You trade Smith this week, and then you're like, oh, crap, I got to trade Wallace next week. And then Tom Mitchell gets dropped, and you got to trade him, and then all your trades are gone.
Similar to what we discussed before, yeah, if you had more than 3 trades and you could do it in a 1-trade move, I'd personally be picking James Kelly. I think, you know, Malcheski's form at the start of the year really worries me. And James Kelly, I think he's probably just a bit more of a known quantity with Geelong pushing to make the 8 there. That's the direction I'd be heading. But I agree with Mark. It's probably a bit of a tight call as to which way you go. But, you've got to be able to do it in 1 trade, of course.
So you'll be doing that then, Donny? You'll be trading?
Oh, I didn't say that.
No, you'll be holding Smith still.
Well, he's got him on the bench, Marcus.
Yeah, he's my bench cover. I mean, the other thing I could do is probably trade him to Kelly, and then I can use Hibbo as my bench cover.
Well, lucky for you, Dunny, he's not a liability, so that's fortunate. Brian Flanagan's questions next. He's looking at trading Hamling to either Kelly or Malcheski. So this is an interesting one. Not if you had Brody Smith, but if you had trades to spare. So these guys who have been conservative, now's when they get to flex their muscle. Would you guys consider trading Hamling to either one of these two blokes as a swing cover?
Yeah, I think I would be.
He has Oxley on field as well, so that maybe pushes Oxley out as the cover.
If you can run with Oxley as your bench cover, I think that'd be fine. But yeah, I'm not sure. Is Hamling, I don't even know if he's back this week or not, but I'd be looking to trade him out.
He is listed as a test. I think he was listed as a test last week, though, as well. I think you're probably right, Dunny. And I think that I agree with you that I'd have Kelly just a little bit ahead of Malcheski, although I think they're both probably reasonable picks. Oxley to the bench is a really interesting one if you can't loophole, because based on his 118 on the weekend, like, he just seems like the sort of player that when you get the injury and you need the cover, he's going to score 30, and when you just got him on the bench, he's going to score 130. So it's a high-risk maneuver moving him to the bench, I think.
I think, yeah, if you can loophole him, that would be just fantastic, because you can just take that punt every week, put the E on him and see how you go.
For people with Brody Smith and the cash to upgrade and they're keen to upgrade, who would you look at under 500K, assuming that if you had the money for Hodge and Pickin, you'd take them?
I think probably it's the similar options that we were looking at last week, the Rance McDonald types. Hooley's been down for a couple of weeks. I don't think that those sort of defenders normally stay down for too long, and he will probably come back and average 90 plus.
Cade Simpson does stand out at 460,000 to me. This topic's also relevant for anyone who had Jamie McMillan, who's out for 4 weeks, and Jason Coombs has asked whether to keep or trade in that situation. I think probably trade at 480K for 4 weeks, wouldn't you, Mark?
Yeah, look, there's probably a good chance that he comes back and isn't able to show the same form that he has for the last 6 weeks. I mean, if a player's ever going to get injured and go out for 4 weeks, you want him to do it after going on a hot streak. So, yeah, probably a reasonable time to trade him out. And if you can get up to one of the Hodge picking types, that'd be pretty nice.
Someone that doesn't seem to be getting a lot of love with coaches, only in 3.7% of teams, Corey Enright at 490K, averaging 94, averaging 101 in his last 5, 86 in his last 3. Either of you guys keen on him? He's in my team.
Yeah, I don't mind Corey, but to be honest, The one that attracts me a little bit more is Robert Murphy, who's only 8K more, just because...
He was my next question.
Yeah, Corey Enright worries me. Like, he can sometimes go on a quiet patch where he has a few 70 games, and, you know, he has played his 300th now. There is a question mark whether or he'll actually play on. So I think that Robert Murphy's a little bit more of a safe option. He's just so consistent. He's been doing the exact same thing for years, and he's been in quite superb form. I think out of the last 5 weeks, he's scored 94 plus in four of them, which is great. Three tons there, so he's in pretty good nick.
I'd find it pretty hard to split those two, to be honest. Enright would normally get a rest on the run home, but the fact that Geelong and Adelaide didn't play last week probably means that he won't, which is good for anyone that's got him or looking to bring him in. I think that there's a really good chance they're going to average about the same over the next 7 weeks.
Murphy was the one I was going to ask you about next after Enright, because I think, you know, I like him. And you mentioned his consistency. If you look at his averages, you know, 93 overall, 94 in his last three, and 98 in his last five, he is just, you know what you're going to get from him every week.
Yeah, and something that doesn't get mentioned enough, Robert Murphy gets on the park. He's very consistent at doing that, which is actually very rare in the back line and very important in the back line. So I think last year, if you took out all the injury games, he was a top six backman, which is something that doesn't get looked at enough. So he's definitely one. Michael Hurley, we actually got a question about.
Yeah.
454. He's bottomed out now after 44 in round 14. So his break even's only 27. Thoughts?
He is in seriously awesome form. I'm not sure whether it's always going to convert to Supercoach scores because he's going to play a pretty defensive role, but I guess the ball's probably going to be down there a lot in the rest of the year. And yeah, he is in super form. Should be fighting with Rance for all Australian centre half back, and probably a good chance both of them get a gig.
So out of all those that we talked about, you guys care to give a, you know, favourite two maybe?
I think you guys are probably spot on with Murphy and Enright.
Yeah, I think that's the way I'd be heading as well, Murphy and Enright. I do like the pick of Hurley, certainly a bit of unique there as well, but if I had to pick one, I'd probably go with Murphy there, I think.
I don't mind that Hurley pick, actually. So, yeah, I'll go with Hurley and Murphy. I know I'm a Geelong supporter, and I don't think Enright's a bad pick, but I've had him to run out seasons before where he's been, you know, a bit tepid, so I'm worried that he might tail off. Off the back line now, and we'll go to the midfield. A couple of questions on Gaff and Steel side bottom. So interesting, because we haven't had much talk on other midfielders with all this Gary Ablett attention, but Steel, Steel side bottom, he bottomed out after a few quiet weeks, but he has gone up 25K after the weekend. So he's at 515, but that's still pretty cheap considering he averaged 110 last year, 113, something great. He scored 107, 122 and 117 in the last three games. So he's back on point now.
Yeah, and interesting that they've come in losses as well. Sidebottom does have the potential to go really, really big. He probably has a pretty high standard deviation for a midfielder. But yeah, big fan of Sidebottom. I think he's a pretty solid pick.
Yeah, I agree, mate. In his nine games this year, he's only had three poor ones. A lot of us picked him in round one where he had that massive score, and I think he's just back to that form now. Definitely a great selection.
Andrew Gaff, he's actually really expensive now because he has a three-round average of 120. So he's at 570,000 at the moment, but he's averaging 105 across the season. He's building. He's one of those players that you can see his finish to the year is going to be stronger than his start. This is a breakout sort of finish to the year. And so he could be on to a ripper finish here. And West Coast continuing to hold form. You guys reckon that he could be a, you know, a sneaky breakout pick?
I'd say that he's a pick for 2016, personally. I wouldn't feel very comfortable picking him at 576. Like you said, he could have a breakout finish to the year. He's certainly being able to manage to keep his possession count right up. But then again, there's probably too much risk attached to him at that price, I think.
I agree, he's pretty risky. I like the selection, though. It seems to be whether Pritis is getting more of the attention, and people just seem to be forgetting about Gaff sitting out there just racking up the possessions. Just looking at his scoring chart for the year, a lot of his games early on in the season were sitting just around or below 100, and now he seems to be really pushing above 100 in that, you know, in his last five, six, seven games. So, look, a good selection, but, yeah, there is a bit of risk associated with it.
his low score for the year is 84, which is, for 2015, is pretty incredible because a lot of the premium midfielders have been toppling in games across the season. So he's been very consistent. But yeah, overall, I do agree with you guys. Very risky. Move on to the forward line now, and the two more bottomed out guys to look at. At Tono ASZ is asking about Jimmy Bartel. Bottomed out at 466K, racking it up. Still playing in the midfield as was promised early on in the season. 116, yeah. 101, the last two games. Thoughts? His break even's only 60 now after dropping another 32,000 on the weekend.
Pretty devastated to see him tearing it up after we really put our nuts on the line to recommend him as a pick going into the season. We supposedly said he was a must have and then he went and got injured. Yeah, I think he's super pick at 460.
Yeah, if I had to make a move in my forward line, he'd be the first one to be looking at the moment. That price is phenomenal for what we know he can do. As I say, yeah, he's break even around 60. He's not going to be under 500 for very long.
We got one more question here from QTQQ about Goddard. So in comparison this week, is he a non-factor because of Bartel? He's still cheap, mind you. He's at 441,000. Scored 105 and 106. Bottomed out after his 30.
I'm a Goddard owner. That 30 really hurt. If I had to make a selection between the two at the moment, I'd be picking Bartel.
All right, so that wraps up this week's show. Ended up having a bit to talk about despite most of us being low on trades, but still getting tempted, I guess, by Malcheski, by James Kelly, by Jimmy Bartel, and for those of you without Ablett, by Gary Ablett himself. So hopefully nobody's doing anything too crazy. Want to hold on to our great league rankings, guys.
Maybe the way to do that is just go crazy, though. But yeah, I'm sure that later on in the season, we will want the trades. It's boring to hold on to the trades, but I'm sure we'll need them eventually.
Yeah, I'm not quite as adventurous as you guys. I've still got my five at the moment, and I'm hoping to not have to use any for a couple of weeks. But like we said earlier, though, if you've got five trades and you don't have a Goldstein or an Ablett, I'd definitely be using at least one, if not two, to try and bring those guys in.
I just don't think you like trading as much as us, mate. Every year we get to this stage and you've got more trades than us.
I like to come home with a wet sail there, guys. Yeah, I had a pretty ordinary start to the year. I probably didn't trade hard enough early enough. I think that was the problem. I left my run too late to get my team going. Probably spent a bit of time early either trying to patch up errors. I'm probably a bit too cautious, really, early on in the season.
Well, Dunny, at least now you've got all these options, mate. So it's good to have you on. You're actually considering things each week, whereas Mark and I just have to force ourselves to sit on our hands. It's hard.
Oh, but every time I come on with you guys, it makes me want to trade, and then I'll go down to no trades.
Evil.
It's great. Well done, boys, this week. Yeah, well done. And I hope you guys can post 2,600 again and just keep up the great work. You're doing fantastic down there.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, mate. We're looking up to you, but don't worry, we're going to try and catch you.
Awesome to have you on Ian, Dunny.
No, thanks, guys. Awesome to be on. Hopefully I can get the top score again next time I'm on. But, you know, you got me this week, Marcus. So.
Yeah, and you're staying in front, mate. You're still staying in front of me. So I'm lagging. I'm still third out of the three of us.
That's okay. I'm sure you'll catch me up. Don't worry.
All right, guys. And with that, we'll catch you all next week. See ya.
See you, everyone. Yeah.